Hello and welcome to the Rookie Pastor Podcast. My name's Eric Navin. I am your host, pastor of Bailey Presbyterian Church, and this is episode 11, and this is part two of my conversation with Brett McAlpin, a MTW missionary serving in Plovdiv, Bulgaria. And so today we conclude our conversation talking about how mission, the work of missions has affected Brett's family and how they deal with the constant pressures of ministry, how they minister under the coronavirus pandemic, how that's affected them in Bulgaria as they live in a major city in the country. We talk about language challenges and how they navigate living in a country where English is not the primary language. We also discuss the misconceptions that the church often has about missions, and why we partner with missionaries and we don't employ missionaries. That's a particular thing I wanted to talk about. We wrap it up by talking about what churches can learn from their missionaries and why, at the end of the day, Christians should consider the work of missions, even in the end, if you don't end up being a missionary. So I hope that you enjoyed the first part of our conversation, and if you did, you'll really like the second part of our conversation. And may you be encouraged, and as always, thanks for listening. How has being on the mission field for 6 years, changed your family dynamics? I would assume that, because it's interesting, because it's almost like a family business in the sense that, you know, everyone is kind of on the same page because you're all in this together. Whereas, you know, when back in the States, you've got your job, she's got her job, and you have your schedules and doing this, that, and the other. And then you go to the mission field and still busy, I'm sure, and dealing with different people. But there's a sense of, I guess, is there kind of a shared sense of purpose?
Yeah, it is certainly different. And maybe the major difference, and this might be true, and I would love to hear what you say about this, but just for ministry in general, but work life is also home life. It's sort of all of life.
Yeah.
Because it's your calling. It's the reason you are where you are. And like you said, the whole family's invested in that. Now, we were fortunate that our kids were very young when we first came here. And so this is pretty much home for them. This is all they know, really. Our youngest was born here. He's only four. But, you know, in my previous job, I would work my hours. But then I would come home and I would be home and work is over and now I'm home. But with missions work, I come home and my wife and I are talking about, well, what's going on at church or what's going on with our team member. It's still work. It's still going on.
Yeah.
And if we need to talk with someone in the States, then that means a late night, you know, video chat on the computer. And so rather than spending quality time, you know, together as a family or with my wife, I'm still working late into the evening. And so it just changes the dynamic. And everybody has to be, sort of on board with that and on the same page. And it almost feels like you never get to turn it off. It's just always sort of there.
Yeah. That's true. And I think that's why it's important to try to find those routines, the places where, Sunday is the Sabbath day. It's rest and worship, but Saturday is very special for my family. And so, I mean, unless it's only a couple of times a year where I'll be pulled out to do something. Barring any kind of emergency. But like Saturdays for us are very much, you know, just especially Saturday morning because I make pancakes, right? So that's just like that's kind of these moments where you try to create some routines for the family that they know, okay, this is something, and Dad does this with us. And so we have six kids now, so just trying to do that, trying to create those routines, and four daughters.
Yeah.
Daughters, two sons. Last night I was sitting by the TV with Holden,
our youngest, Rebecca, who's 3 months, and I'm still holding her, and then the other three daughters come in, and they're all just sitting there, and I'm like, how in the world did I get four daughters? but it was awesome. So the boys were off playing with their Halo Lego figures or whatever. But I think just trying to find those. Yeah, and you can't turn it off. And I think it's hard. I think it's a weight upon every family that's in ministry, every husband and wife, because even if your wife is not employed by the missionary organization or by the church, there is this kind of sense of otherness that they feel. It can be kind of wives can feel this sense of like they're supposed to be holier than they are.
Exactly.
Because they're the missionary's wife. Missionary's wife, the pastor's wife, you know. And so I think for me, it's been important also to have those close relationships with people, usually in a similar situation, other pastors or my wife, to be able to talk with another pastor's wife. And so just to talk and to share and have that, and to really just be able to unburden yourself with anything that your insecurities, frustrations, just things that you need to share. I think that's crucial to have, so you don't get isolated.
Mm-hmm. You're exactly right. We try to do the same thing about Saturday. We try to take Saturday as a family day because, you know, during the week, the kids are in school and we're doing different things. Saturday just seems to be the day that works for us. And there have been ministry events that I've had to say, I'm sorry, I just can't do it, because it's on Saturday and I'm committed. That's not easy also. And then having a person, you're exactly right. Or a group of people, even if possible, but, you know, one or two people that you can really, share things with, and you know that, they're a safe person and they're going to share their stuff with you. You're going to share their stuff with them. And we've been fortunate to have, you know, through the years, one or two, people like that. We have there's a area right outside of Plovdiv, just maybe a 15-minute drive from our apartment, called Kuklin. And it's a small village. And then right outside the village, there's this just great, just forested area, picnic spot. And I go out there every now and then with a buddy of mine, and we just build a campfire and just sit around the campfire and talk. And that's been so really just therapeutic. for the spiritual nourishment for our souls.
So you said earlier that, you know, it's very much Bulgarian culture to just gather together, to sit, to talk for a long time. How has that and your ministry been affected by the coronavirus, this pandemic we're going through? I mean, I pulled up, you know, Bulgaria's numbers, and I mean, thankfully they're not very high. On the Worldometer website anyway. I'm looking at 825 cases. So are you guys, I mean, like Mississippi, like the governor has declared we're on shelter at home orders right now.
Yeah.
So we're only allowed to go get groceries, you know, and things, but we have to stay home. Our church hasn't met since, March, 15th was the last service that we held, and we haven't held a in-person service since then. Everything's went on digital and online. How has it affected you guys over there?
Much in the same way. Our church also is not meeting, and most of the churches aren't, pretty much all of them, I think, aren't meeting in person, which is a huge change for Bulgarians, because they're used to being out, and I can look out my window right now, and normally at this time in the afternoon there would just be people everywhere, because now it's springtime and the sun is shining, it's getting warmer, and people normally would just be covering the sidewalks and streets. They're just outside in the afternoon, and they say Nodesotka, which means on a walk, but we're just out, you know, we're just enjoying each other. And we can't do it. It's forbidden, you know, to go out unless you're going to the grocery store or going to the pharmacy or something very particular. And then you return back home. So similar to what the rest of the world is doing. We have been fortunate that we don't have a lot of cases, but the government sure is taking it seriously. which is, I think, good, that they're taking it seriously before, you know, it becomes, out of control or out of hand. Our two daughters, are in first and third grade in Bulgarian public schools. And for the past, 5 or 6 weeks, they've been doing school on Zoom, which has been a unique experience for them. So we frequently have, Valerie and I frequently have meetings, you know, over Zoom, because we're talking with colleagues or whatever around the world. And now they're getting to experience it, which is fun for them. But it presents a challenge, for the family, just like families everywhere throughout the world are experiencing right now. And we're sort of in the same boat.
Yeah. So, this is just a side question, which is, you mentioned your kids going to the Bulgarian public school. And I was just thinking a question about language. So I would presume they've learned to speak Bulgarian.
They have, yes.
And so I just remember growing up and you would have friends or you would know kids at school, you know, in America growing up and where, I grew up in Southern California. So I had a bunch of friends whose parents only spoke Spanish. And so they spoke Spanish at home, but they spoke English at school.
That's right.
And so is that a similar situation where, I mean, because I know you guys have learned Bulgarian, but do y'all intentionally speak English at home? How do y'all navigate the balance of language?
Yeah, it's a good question. We're always trying to figure it out. We do speak English at home. We are learning Bulgarian and are conversational and you know, we could talk to a pretty good extent, but the kids are past us. They're way past us now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And they speak with local accents and everything, and we still speak a lot like Americans that are trying to speak Bulgarian. But yeah, so that's exactly what we do. We are English here and then they're Bulgarian all day at school, except for their English class, because they start in first grade learning English, here in the schools. So they do well in their English class.
Yeah.
it's an interesting balance. The reason we want them to be in the public school is not because we think it's a great education necessarily, but we want them to own the culture, to love the culture and to not be living here, but really separated from it. And unfortunately, a lot of times when missionaries move to another place, either by choice or just because there's not any good options for them, the children end up feeling really separate, really segregated from the rest of the society, the rest of the culture. And so to try to mitigate that, we enrolled them in the public schools and they're doing really well. They've had a good experience. We do supplement their overall education with homeschool curriculum from the States. Mm-hmm. And so they're also getting, this American education, but they're getting the experience of doing school in Bulgarian, having Bulgarian friends, and living as a Bulgarian. And we've learned a lot from them, through their involvement. We've learned a lot about the culture. We've of course met a lot of people, a lot of parents and things through that.
No, that's really neat. And it's, and I've heard about that struggle from other missionaries where there wasn't a school system or, there were some serious issues that they were trying to wrestle with. And that culture issue was a central one and I know one who said, they were struggling with it because they were trying to figure out one of the reasons they were wrestling with it was because if you homeschooled, the people would think you were crazy or they would think you were weird there, that you were just, you know, that it would increase the kind of otherness of you and you're already a stranger. You don't want to seem more strange. And so they were wrestling with that. And I think their kids were super young at the time. I don't know what they ended up deciding, on that, but yeah, it's definitely a challenge.
It is. It's a real struggle. It's one of the biggest, prohibitors of people coming to the mission field. And it's also one of the big reasons that people leave is because of their children's education or opportunities for their children or their children not, you know, having a safe environment or something like that.
Yeah. So, So we've hit at some of these so I guess some more questions here, and we've already hit at some of them, but I think you'd like to tackle them just head on, which is what are some common misconceptions that you've picked up that the church has about missions and missions work?
Mm-hmm. This is becoming more and more difficult for me to answer this particular question the longer that I live outside of America.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm more and more disconnected from what. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead. Yep.
I'll give it a shot though, and then you throw out after I've spoken that my conceptions of the misconceptions are false. So I think a lot of people in America still view missions in the sense of 19th century missions, or even early 20th century missions, where missionaries are going to rural areas, reaching tribal peoples, and they're living in thatched huts, and everybody's barefoot. And don't misunderstand me, those opportunities still exist. But a lot of missions today takes place within the city, because more than half the world's population today lives in the city. And we understand this idea of urbanization. People are coming to the cities by the millions, looking for jobs, looking for opportunities, and for various reasons. And so most of missions today happens in cities. And so for someone like me who grew up in rural Mississippi, actually part of my cultural adjustment has been living in the center of a city, because I grew up in this small community where we didn't even have a stoplight in my town.
Yeah.
and so now to live in a fairly large city is quite an adjustment. And so I think that might be one misconception that people have.
Okay.
Another one is that missionaries, and we've already hit on this a little bit, but yeah, missionaries are real people. There's not heroes. They're not superheroes, or they don't have an exceptional faith necessarily. We have faith, and we're not supernatural beings or anything like that. We just feel a calling to live our lives in another culture. And like we said earlier,
I want to say something. You tell me if you agree with this, which mm-hmm. is missionaries. They may not have a supernatural faith, but they are mastered by a very strong conviction, which is the Great Commission, and to go, and that they need to bring the gospel to. They're being called to bring the gospel to this place over here, because without that conviction, then there's not a willingness to pay that cost.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would agree with that. And one of the questions that in talking with other missionaries, one of the questions that I think most of us are asking ourselves, or the question that's always sort of nagging us in the back of our mind is it worth it? Is it worth the sacrifice, the sacrifice that we've left our families, and that our families back home, back in the States, are always saying, hey, would you come back home? We really would like for you to live here. You know, why are you taking our grandkids away from us?
that's a hard one.
Yeah. And so the question that we're always asking is it worth it? Because when you are thinking about going, you imagine, you count the cost, you know what the sacrifice is, but then you also imagine that it will be worth it, and probably you have expectations of bearing fruit, your ministry bearing fruit. But then when reality sort of hits and your ministry is not bearing fruit, or you're not seeing what you thought you might see, that little question attacks your calling. And if you don't have a very strong sense of, I'm called here because Christ is worth it, and my identity is in Christ, and my identity is not in numbers, and my identity is not in I can write good newsletters back to my supporters and prove to them that their dollars are turning results, and that know, it's worth it to them. But I have a calling. God has me here, and I'm going to be obedient and faithful to that calling.
Well, I can tell you,
that's a big challenge.
I can tell you that, as a pastor of a small church in, you know, I call it semi-rural, Mississippi, I have no idea what you're talking about. So just, none of those, struggles about, growth or numbers or bearing fruit. No, you're exactly right. That is true just ministry wide. And one of the things I like to talk about with, it reminded me, you were sharing, when we talk about, and actually I have a funny story I wanted to tell you about, when I was in Moscow, when I was in college, but talk about assumptions and misconceptions. But the partnership that we partner with missionaries, we don't employ missionaries. And I think the fundamental text here is Philippians 1, where he's rejoicing in the partnership that he has with the Philippian church in the gospel. And so when our missionaries are giving us updates, they're not the tech startup reporting back to the venture capitalist who invested in them, right? They're not going back to the employer that's giving them money. Like,
it's not actually a return on the investment,
right? It is. We have the privilege of partneringship. So we have, you know, when we set our monthly support to you, it's not we're giving you this much money because we expect this many people or this percentage of growth in your ministry, but we are privileged to you were sent, we were called to help you go, and we have the privilege of partnering with you as you go out to a place that we can't go, that we're not called to go, and you bring the gospel there, and we have the privilege of connecting with you, of supporting with you, of being able to have the joy of sharing in that ministry as people that we will never see, never meet, come to faith in Jesus Christ, and as the gospel is proclaimed. And so, like, that's missions, not we partner with missionaries, we don't employ missionaries.
Amen. Amen, brother.
Well, okay, so I want to show you this. So when I spent a couple of months, the longest I was ever on the mission field was a very short term, is 2 months in Moscow. But sometimes people, you tell them you're 2 months in Moscow, they raise their eyebrows a little high and they're like, that long? But, and it was, through a cross-cultural project out of, Perimeter Church in Atlanta. Yeah. So, and so we were there we were in college, so we were just American college students, and that was the focal point of our attraction. We were like, hey, we would go to college campuses and just go, hey, we're Americans. You want to hang out with us? And they'd be like, it works. They were like,
we use Americans for bait all the time. They're good baits. Yeah.
Yeah. They always wanted to play soccer, and they wanted to do Russia versus America. and they were always better than us, except we had a few guys, but I was terrible. I was always dragging our team down. We must have toured the Red Square 1,000 times, because whenever we would go meet them, they go, oh, well, you got to go to the square. And so they would take us over there. We just hang out with them. And, but then one time, one of the Russian guys he said to us, he came up to us snickering and said, and he was like, so, do you Americans really believe that there are bears in Red Square? And he's just giggling all over himself because he thought we had this ridiculous misconception that I had never heard of. But it was something that they thought we thought about them.
Okay.
It was like, no, we've never heard of that. But it's funny how we can kind of get those. I thought of that when you were talking about, like, the misconceptions that we think we might have, but we don't have, but there's sometimes when you talk to people or you hear somebody or they ask you a question and you go, they don't get it, you know? And so sometimes maybe the questions we ask can be more revealing. Kind of maybe if the only question you get asked is, well, what about safety? You know, and you kind of go, well, that tells me something about, you know, this person's like, I'm glad they're concerned about my safety and the safety of my family. But I mean, you know, we're all on shelter at home orders. So life is fragile. So
exactly. Yeah.
what could the church learn from their missionaries that they're partnering with?
I'm sure there are a lot of lessons, and I'm sure there are a lot of good books on this subject. I'll give it a shot. I think one thing would be that people can live with a lot less than they think they can. And missionaries, you know, most of us sell or give away our stuff. I gave away half my book collection, which I still mourn before coming to the mission field. And, there've been things like, my wife, we were in the first year and, realized that we actually could have brought, there was more space on our pallet than we thought. And we'd already sold or gotten rid of, you know, serving dishes and things that we'd gotten, you know, for our wedding when we got married, wedding gifts, things like that, that we still had. And we had already gotten rid of those things, and she lamented those things, and those were difficult. And yet living with less and living in this sort of smallish apartment, certainly by American standards, small, there's so much freedom, in being rid of the amount of stuff that we had accumulated, living in America in our, you know, 3-bedroom, 2-bath garage house, you know, with yard and everything. We were beginning to accumulate a lot of stuff like most people do. And
it's literally the house I live in, a 3-2 with a garage.
Okay. Yeah. So that was us. We had the little garden home and, but we were filling it up, you know, as rapidly as I would. And my wife's always great about decluttering and getting rid of stuff, which is good because I'm an accumulator. But there's so much freedom in living with less. And here in Bulgaria, people don't see a problem with wearing the same outfit several days in a row. There's no cultural stigma about that.
That's great.
It is. So our wardrobes have shrunk dramatically because we can just rewear stuff and we don't have to have a different outfit for every day of the week. Or, you know, if I'm meeting with the same person, you know, a couple of days in a row, we're probably both going to show up with the same outfit on the next day and not think anything about it. And yet there's really not the freedom to do that, it seems, in the States. So that's really a nice thing. And I think, people, if they, you know, would consider shrinking their wardrobes or shrinking the amount of stuff that they have or live on less than they might think is comfortable.
Yeah. My 5-year-old, she said, she complained a while back and she said, here's your dress for church or to wear. And she was like, I wore that last month.
Exactly.
Yes. We're like, yeah, that's okay. You can wear it again. It's all right.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Whereas in the past, even in America, I mean, you had your church outfit and that was it.
Yeah.
You know, you had your Sunday go to meeting, you know, outfit, and that's what it was. And you wore it every time. So what's wrong with that?
They were literally your church clothes.
Exactly, your church clothes. Pastor, just have one suit and one tie, and you're good to go.
So there you go. So, yeah. So that's I only got 2 suits, but I got more than enough ties. That's sure.
Good.
So you said. So live with less.
Live with less.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the next thing I would say is what does it really mean to be a church family? As members of our mission team, they are our coworkers, they're our friends, they're our grandparents, they're our aunts, uncles to our children, they're fellow church members, they're everything. We're with them all of the time because we're working with them, we're living together with them, we're going to the document office together. I mean, everything we do, we're always together. And if we don't love and care for each other well, things go south very quickly. Because you can imagine even in your own family, you spend a lot of time with people and there's going to be conflict. There's going to be, disagreements and things. And if those aren't handled with open, honest communication, And you just have to confess, forgive, repeat. You know, you're just always in that cycle of working together with one another in love. And I think a lot of times what we do in the, is just if we disagree with another person, then we just try to separate ourselves from that person. We say, well, I'll just not deal with that person, rather than actually reconciling with that person and showing love to them. So that's one thing I think we're sort of forced to do here. And we don't always do it well, but we're forced to do it. And then I would say, step outside of your bubble, step outside of your comfort zone, and view the world from the perspective of other people. Because we're all guilty of this. And even now I'm in my missionary bubble, so I'm seeing the world through my bubble, so I can point the finger at myself. But the more that you, even through traveling, you can do this, just viewing the world. But as you read about other things, there are a ton of good resources. We have this book for our kids called Window on the World, or something like that, and it tells, you know, about these various people groups throughout the world and how to pray for them, things like that. Operation World is another one. But just thinking about the world through God's perspective, through God's eyes, how does He view people? How does He look at these people? Rather than always viewing other people through your own small cultural lens, or even as an American. So try to step outside of who I am as an American viewing the rest of the world, but try to view the world with a different perspective, I think is helpful. And then connect people to Jesus, and not necessarily our version of Christianity or our denominational tradition, but connecting people to Jesus. Who is Jesus, the person of Jesus? And we're faced with this one here because there's the history of the Eastern Orthodox Church in Bulgaria. So if you're familiar with the church history, I know that you are. In the 11th century, the church split, the great schism, yep. East and West, Roman Catholic Church, Eastern Orthodox Church. And so we're part of that Eastern tradition here. So we're essentially converting people from Christianity to Christianity. Yeah. And so the main religion here is not Buddhism or Hinduism or something like that. It's Christianity. Realistically, it's atheism. The way that people live their lives, they really don't give a minute's thought to who God is or their relationship to Him. They're just traditionally, nationally Orthodox Christian. And so we have this challenge of, if we try to bring people out of that Orthodox church too quickly, then they reject us. And so we try to connect them to Jesus and find out, what is your relationship? What is your knowledge, about Jesus? I think the church in America, could possibly do a similar thing, because a lot of people, mm-hmm. particularly in Mississippi, where I grew up and where you are, think they're Christian. And you almost have the same challenge of converting people from what they think Christianity is to real Christianity. And I think that is connecting them to Jesus.
Yeah. Well, that's really good. That is, that's very good. And it is definitely a challenge. The thing I've heard it put is, you know, converting people who already think they're Christians. So it's like, is it hard to do that, or to reach like completely, you know, pagan, hostile people? It's like, I don't know.
That's so, right. That's right. It has its own challenges for sure.
What words of encouragement would you give to people to consider the work of missions? Not only giving to it, but even considering going themselves.
Do it. Go. There's so many opportunities to experience missions. I would say do it for the right reason. Don't do it as a vacation, because that probably will lead to problems. But if you feel that the Lord might be calling you to something, and you want to sort of test that calling, to sort of get a feel for what that might look like, there are so many opportunities to do that today with as quickly and easily as we can travel normally outside of a pandemic.
Yeah.
The way that we can normally travel, and things that can be done today. There are so many opportunities, to get a feel for that. And, the first thing you can do is minister to your own community. As we said, you know, whether you want to call it being a missionary to your community, or just testing different areas of ministry. If, you know, a lot of times in missions, we say, whatever you're doing where you are now, that's what you're going to be doing when you get to the mission field. And not to say that it'll be the exact same thing, but if you don't have a heart for people where you are, you most likely will not have a heart for people in another country. And so as part of testing that, you can say, how am I loving people right now? How am I sharing the gospel with people right now where I am? Because sometimes missions gets this feel of glitz and glamour and exciting stories. I mean, we've all read missionary biographies. I certainly have. And then the book ends on a triumphal note. You know, the whole tribe was converted to Christ.
Yeah.
And just like, yes, so exciting. And yet most of ministry work is just mundane. It's just normal. It's this marathon, not sprint life of doing the average things, but being a faithful, obedient follower of Christ, in the midst of that. And so, how are you doing in that? How are you living your average mundane Christian life where you are? And then get the experience of crossing cultures. You can cross cultures within America very easily. There's so many different cultures, in America. And then you can go overseas. You can go to another country, and get a taste for that.
Well, I think that's an important question. I think everyone should ask that question. Like, I think everyone should, I mean, even just for the sake of the experience of, you know, asking yourself, I mean, cause that's really getting you to do some self-evaluation. And to say, okay, how am I loving people? Because even if you don't end up going to the mission field, or, you know, if you end up, you still like, what I mean, like, is if someone goes, oh, well, you know what, I'm really not doing good, like, I'm really not sharing the gospel with anybody, I'm not loving people very well, so, well, I just don't need to go to the mission field, and that's all. You know, and it's like, well, no. Like, maybe you don't need to go to the mission field, but, you know, but it's that what that means is that there's growth, there's opportunity for growth there.
Sure.
And so that's definitely a challenge, or a good, healthy challenge for us to take in. How can people connect with you if they want to get in touch with you, or if they want to support the work that you're doing in Plovdiv? How can they do that?
Sure. So they can go to mtw.org, and they can, there's a search for there. They can go to look up the missionaries, and they can see our prayer card. If they want to email us, I'm pretty sure that option is there. And then if they want to donate, the option is also there. So just under mtw.org, search for, missionaries, and just put in McAlpin, and we'll pop up there on the website.
Oh, excellent. Well, thanks so much, man. This is really good. I really very much enjoyed this. Thank you for giving the time.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And it's what? Close? Is it close to? Was it 5 o'clock? 5:30 over there?
Yes, exactly.
So, yep. PM. So
PM, right?
Yeah. So, all right. Well, you have a wonderful evening, and just thank you. And we'll be praying for you. I know you'll be praying for us. So
great. Thank you. And I hope we can see y'all soon.
Yes, absolutely. All right, talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
Bye. All right, well, that is going to wrap up episode 11 as we close out this conversation with Brett McAlpin about missions and the work that God is doing through him and his family there in Plovdiv, Bulgaria. You heard Brett's contact info earlier there, so be sure to reach out to him and give him some encouragement. And if you'd like to support him, go over to the MTW website. If you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at eric@baileychurch.com. Would love to hear from you, comments, suggestions, anything you got. And that'll wrap it up. So for the Rookie Pastor Podcast, I'm Eric Mabbitt. And remember, just one step at a time.